From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. First, I wanted to welcome all our listeners today and wish all of you a very healthy holiday season and new year, and I'm certainly hoping that 2020 is great for you. This particular podcast, I'm just going to briefly review some of the statistics that are relevant to our work on ACC.org this past year. As you know, our team is constantly striving to provide you educational content that covers the range of cardiovascular practice and in formats that you find digestible and effective. Over the year, we covered the big four scientific meetings, ACC, ESC, TCT, and the AHA meetings. We presented about 500 journal scans and nearly 150 clinical trials on the website. There were 95 podcasts that we recorded this year, 365 news stories, about 200 analyses, a number of patient case quizzes, nearly 100, and certified patient cases, as well as the usual video interviews we do at the meetings, polls, and FDA alerts. So it's been a busy year for our team at ACC.org, and we greatly enjoy the chance to try to bring you educational content wherever you are. I also thought I might review just briefly five studies this past year that I think really are relevant and potentially game-changing type studies for the practice of medicine. This is like 2019 in review. I picked a couple of clinical trials that I think are important and a couple of journal scans also. The first trial was ischemia, and of course this was the big trial presented in November, over 5,000 patients with stable ischemic heart disease who had moderate to severe ischemia randomized to routine invasive strategy versus medical therapy. Recall that all the patients with left main disease had been excluded. And the study was important. It showed that basically the primary endpoint, which was cardiovascular death, MI, resuscitated cardiac arrest, or hospitalization for unstable angina, or heart failure at about 3.5 years, was very similar between the invasive group and the medical therapy arm. There was a reduction in the amount of angina in patients who were assigned to the invasive arm, which, of course, is relevant to our discussions with our patients surrounding quality of life. Obviously, we're very interested in this full report in a published journal, and that will be, I'm sure, forthcoming in the coming months. Another big trial that I thought was really important was the DAPA-HF trial. This was a study of dapagliflozin in patients with heart failure and reduced ejection fraction. Remember that dapagliflozin is this sodium glucose cotransporter SGLT2 inhibitor, and it was compared to placebo in patients with HFrEF. It was a large study, nearly 5,000 patients with a year and a half of follow-up, mean age about 66. And the drug therapy with dapagliflozin was highly effective. The primary outcome of cardiovascular death, hospitalization for heart failure or urgent heart failure visit was 16% versus 21% in the placebo group. And there appeared to be a reduction in cardiovascular death, 9.6% versus 11.5%. And I think this trial simply illustrates the fact that we have these agents that previously had been viewed primarily as drugs for diabetes management, but they're showing evidence of benefit, particularly in HFrEF. And the DAPA-HF trial, I think, is a game changer. I also chose just three journal scans that I thought illustrated interesting findings. One of them actually was a trial. It was called NOTION, and this was a study in Nordic countries looking at patients with severe aortic stenosis and lower surgical risk who either went through TAVR or SAVR. And the study looked at structural valve deterioration at follow-up. And interesting, at 6 years, the overall mortality for patients getting TAVR versus SAVR was the same. But the rate of structural valve failure was actually a little higher in the SAVR group, 24% versus less than 10%. And it certainly calls to mind the question, all of us have been asking the question, is TAVR in a younger patient as durable as surgical aortic valve replacement? And this relatively small trial gives us some ammunition to say, yeah, it appears to be relatively safe out to 6 years. And this is great news for our patients who prefer to have a non-open surgery type of approach to their valve disease. Another really important journal scan this year was a study looking at pulmonary embolism diagnosis. And the authors did an elegant thing. They basically said, in lower risk patients, can we adjust our D-dimer threshold in order to think critically about how we use imaging in patients with possible pulmonary embolus? And so they basically said in patients with a lower Wells score, they would use a D-dimer threshold of 100 nanograms per ml to rule out a QPE, whereas in patients with a higher Wells score, they dropped that threshold down to 500. And over 2,000 patients were evaluated. And basically, this type of diagnostic strategy would result in the use of chest imaging just in 34% of patients compared to 52% if one used the standard D-dimer threshold of 500 in everybody. I love this study because it basically is sort of a Bayesian approach, taking clinical risk into account and then creating cut points for biomarker analysis to try to get more diagnostic accuracy, but also potentially less imaging. And then the final scan I wanted to just bring to your attention was a study which is an observational study looking at the role of anticoagulant therapy in patients getting either bioprosthetic aortic valve replacement from TAVR or from SAVR. This paper was published last August. Almost 5,000 patients were evaluated, and they simply asked the question, if they were discharged on an anticoagulant or not, what did they find in terms of the valve gradients and so forth? There was no association between anticoagulation use and one-year death for either TAVR or SAVR. Patients who had a SAVR had slightly fewer strokes when discharged on anticoagulation versus not. That was not seen in TAVR. And in terms of valve hemodynamics, you know, that we had these observational studies a couple years ago, which really raised the question whether subvalvular thrombosis was both common and led to a higher chance of high valve gradients and potentially valve failure. This particular observational study in a large group of patients did not find that anticoagulation had a big effect on valve hemodynamics. There was a recent study, a randomized trial comparing rivaroxaban to antiplatelet use after TAVR, and that was halted because of increased bleeding in the rivaroxaban group. So I think we can say that this type of study suggests that routine anticoagulation after bioprosthetic AVR isn't absolutely mandated, and if we do choose to use it without another indication for anticoagulation, such as AFib, probably we might do it for a brief interval and then go off, because it certainly at this point is not clear that all patients have to have this strategy. So I wanted to use this particular podcast, which I recorded on December the 19th, to do a brief year-end review for what we're trying to achieve with our educational offerings on ACC.org. And it's certainly been my pleasure to serve you through the use of the Eagle's Eye View podcast mechanism this year. I've given you 5 articles that changed my practice and I think might be useful to you as you go forward. And look forward to the coming year in 2020 as we work together to understand the changes in cardiovascular science and how we should apply that to our patients. So thank you for listening to this last Eagle's Eye View of 2019. I'll look forward to talking to you in the new year, and I hope you have a great holiday season. Thank you.